Welcome. We're back after a brief hiatus and with a new signing. Hemmer continued to fall apart after losing big again in Munich. Is the club progressing or is it slowly going extinct? Borussia Dortmund topped Eintracht Frankfurt in a coaching masterclass. Is Peter Stöger on his way to a permanent contract? And with the international break on the horizon, we discuss what Germany's squad will look like for the March friendlies. This is Tribuna Weekly. So we've had to increase our squad depth because, of course, we missed the one last week. We apologize for that. But now we have Felix Tomsut. He is a journalist here in Germany. He's been on the podcast a few times before in some of Matt Ford's segments, but he is now in the studio. We have him here on loan. I think we have a buy option, too, so we'll be able to keep him around. So, Felix, I think the only place to start is with Hamburg and how when it seemed like they couldn't fall apart anymore, they've fallen apart even more by firing Bernd Hollerbach, their coach, after just 7 games. And we were both working together when this happened. There was reports that came out that said that he was fired when Sportbild reported that he had been sacked. Mm-hmm. That's when he was actually sacked, because he either made the phone call himself. That wasn't clear whether he made the phone call himself or whether the new chairman of Hamburg actually called him and basically sacked him over the phone. This basically, a situation has gotten from bad to, or worse, I should say, to even worse. What do you make of this whole situation and how Hamburg have progressed this season?
First of all, in regards to the buying option, I need to talk to my agent about that. I can't I can't confirm anything. In regards to Hamburg, basically, I'll divide my answer into two. I think the manner in which they fired Hollerbach was as Hamburg as it gets. There is no easy way of saying it. I would assume Bernd Hollerbach learned of his sacking from the media. It doesn't get much worse than that. And I do agree the manner in which Hamburg has carried out the sacking of Bernd Hollerbach was not on par with any class in world football. However, I do have to play devil's advocate here and argue that given the fact they still have this minimal chance of survival, and given the fact that they still cling on to that status of the Bundesliga dinosaur, that was the one last resort solution they've had. So I really can't think of another move they could pull out of, another rabbit they could pull out of the hat in that case.
Do they really buy into the fact that they're going to stay up? Because basically, Bernd Hoffmann, the new president of Hamburg, who was voted in February, he's already cleaned house. He already got rid I'm blanking on some of the names. Yeah. Jens Todt and Bruchhagen, that's the other one.
Yeah.
They're so insignificant now that I've totally forgot about them.
Yeah.
He's already gotten rid of those two. I mean, why would he get rid of those two on Friday, last Friday, and then wait until after a Munich result that you kind of expected to also get rid of Bernd Hollerbach? That's what I don't really understand.
Well, it's a good question. I'll base my answer upon the actions of Hamburg's own fans. One of the biggest talking points on social media after that game was the action of some would argue an ultras group, some would argue just fans, whatever you may call them. Basically, a group of Hamburg fans broke into the Hamburg training ground, and they've basically put 11 crosses and a banner that says, "We will get you all." And that was after the Munich game, which means the sentiment. Yeah, everybody expected Hamburg to lose in Munich, and everybody expected defeat by at least 3-4 goals. That was well known. But the sentiment and the way that it happened in Munich, the lack of passion, the lack of fighting spirit. It was clearer than just another defeat in Munich. It was so emphatic that the sentiment among the fans was such that something needed to happen. And given that you mentioned that Hamburg has a new, the club has a new president, and that plays into the president's hands because the president wants a new start.
Right, right. I'm not saying that Bernd Hollerbach should have. I was just surprised that when Bernd Hoffmann got rid of Bruchhagen and told, basically that since that Bernd Hollerbach stayed on, I assumed, as I think many did, that Bernd Hollerbach would stay at least until the end of the season because there was really no reason to replace him. Now, Christian Titz, who took over for Bernd Hollerbach, is quote-unquote just the reserve coach. Mm-hmm. It's not like they had another candidate that they were waiting for and they put him into the post. So if you're replacing your current coach with the reserve team coach, why would you do that 4 days after you already cleaned house? Or why wasn't Bernd Hollerbach part of that cleaning house process? That's what I'm really wondering, because the Hamburg fans have been very vocal and have had many displays of disapproval for what Hamburg have done. But I don't think that because there were crosses at the training ground that's the reason why that Bernd Hoffmann decided to also get rid of Bernd Hollerbach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the disconnect for me.
Tell you what, as I said, it's sort of describes a sentiment, that sort of, let's call it, gesture of Hamburg fans at the training ground. Basically, as I said, it plays into the management's hands in the sense that from the moment the new president has been elected, he said he wants to try new things. He wants to get Hamburg to a new way. And given the loss in Munich, given the fact that many of the fans feel the situation is hopeless, he basically sacked Hollerbach on the basis that they're going to try. Basically, they're achieving two things with the sacking of Bernd Hollerbach. First of all,
I understand why. I think you can discuss why they sacked Hollerbach, but I think that's clear. I think the fact that he hasn't, that like you said, they have continuously looked lethargic under Bernd Hollerbach even after he took over. There was no new manager bump of any kind. There was only maybe a draw or two at the beginning, and that was it. So I think that's clear. What just confuses me is, basically, if I understand that Bernd Hoffmann is trying to do things differently, even though the way that he fired, basically the way
it's
that
exactly it, the same it, as we're it used to,
basically is exactly yeah, the same and argument, very unprofessional as how Pembroke have been run over the past few years. But it does baffle me, but that he wasn't as part of the first sackings. But let's move on, because I think we both agree that he should have been sacked, right?
Yes, I think he deserved to stay on until the end of the season, purely on the fact that the situation's hopeless anyway.
Right.
But I do get the sense of why Hamburg sacked him. I'll never agree with the manner in which they sacked him, but I do.
Right.
I do understand. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think he should have been given to the end of the season. I don't think he, with the results that he was getting in the Bundesliga, though, that he would have lasted into next season. I think they would have gone a different direction anyways, and maybe that's why they made the move. Do you think that with this cleaning house that Hamburg is making progress, or is this something that they're just trying to because Bernd Hoffmann, who was actually the chairman in the 2000s when Hamburg was actually good, he also was very quick to move on from people, and he moved on from Bruno Labbadia after a run of bad results. He moved on from and Dietmar Beiersdorfer did not see eye to eye on a lot of the managers that they hired, and he was very quick to pull the trigger on some of the coaches that they've had. So I'm curious as to whether you see this as being progress, or is this just basically a guy coming back and basically pulling the trigger quickly and not really having a contingency plan in place?
That's a good question. And the only answer I have is that remains to be seen. I mean, he's just been put in his new role. It's going to take time for us to understand what his plans really are. It's going to take time for, most importantly, it's going to take time for Hamburg fans to understand what are his real plans and intentions. I don't think that pulling the trigger quickly is necessarily a bad thing under the right circumstances. But when it's a pattern, as is the case with Hamburg within the last, 8 years now, it becomes rather problematic. His big task is going to be getting Hamburg back up within the first season in the Zweite Bundesliga. No other solution will be acceptable, not in the eyes of Hamburg supporters, not in the eyes of the media. And that's going to be his real test. What's Hamburg going to look like next season? This season, I think most people, whether they'll admit it or not, most people accept that Hamburg is going down.
Yeah. So I know that you've gone to some Hamburg games recently. Is that the sentiment that you got from fans? Have they kind of accepted their fate now, or are they still upset that their team is not trying to stay in the division?
I think, again, I'll divide my answer into two. Basically, what they show towards the players, towards the management, is that they expect them to do everything possible in order for the club not to go down. However, when you talk to the people, when you understand what they're saying, when you get to the bottom of the content of their words, you get the sense that that's a situation that people are already accepting. The average fan is already accepting that Hamburg is going down. Whether that's going to happen or not, that remains to be seen. It looks like it's going to be the case. They've stayed after crazy situations before. It doesn't look like it's going to happen this season, but who knows? It's Hamburg.
All right, so now that we've gotten through the biggest result in terms of scoreline, let's get to the biggest result in terms of the showcase, which was, I think, one of the best games of 2018 in the Bundesliga, which was Borussia Dortmund against Eintracht Frankfurt.
Absolutely.
And even we're recording this podcast, of course, on a Tuesday. I'm still remembering all the great, have all the fantastic things that happened in that game, because even in the first half, for me, it did get off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but even that to me was really, really interesting about how basically Dortmund had been keeping their players high, trying to get in behind that back five from Frankfurt. What did you think of the game, and what did you think that Peter Stöger did in order to make sure that they didn't drop points at home against Eintracht Frankfurt?
First of all, the fact that they've won after such performance, after conceding in the 91st minute, that shows lots of character. And yes, some people would put it down to luck, but I think Peter Stöger's substitute did the trick. It proved itself, and his decisions managing the game did the trick, absolutely. And I think with Peter Stöger, it's a learning curve. And I think if he will be given the time at BVB, he will make things happen. And I think this is slowly starting to happen. The quality of their football wasn't as good as people usually expect from BVB, but I think that's bound to change. And that has changed in the second half mostly. Dortmund played great football. Eintracht played their part, absolutely. By the way, speaking of coaches, we also have to talk about Kovac. His decision-making was brilliant. Both of his subs basically did amazingly well. I think one of them scored, the other assisted, if I'm not mistaken. Great coaching and game management. It was an absolutely joy to watch.
Yeah, it was definitely, I think, it was definitely a great coaching game. I mean, you saw Ante Rebic get a yellow card in the first half. Jonathan de Guzman coming on in the second half for him, because also Eintracht Frankfurt were having issues keeping the ball in midfield. We're giving the ball away very carelessly. Mm-hmm. It amazes me that two of their defenders got yellow cards. Marco Rus after 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And he was still able, I mean, Marco Rose being a veteran player, not necessarily surprised by this, but it's still nonetheless impressive that after a second minute yellow card, that not only did he keep it together for the rest of the 88 minutes, but Niko Kovac had enough confidence in him to stay on the pitch for the entire game. And it was that was really, really interesting to me. I wanted to ask, were you surprised that Mishi Batshuayi didn't start?
I thought there were issues with his fitness at the beginning of the game. I think it turned out not to be the case, but at the end of the day, what everyone will remember is the fact that he came on, scored two, got Dortmund the 3 points. Ideally, he should start. I don't think that's even in question. He's Dortmund's best striker, and his qualities are something else. It's not even in question. Nobody doubts that. And the way Stöger uses him so far, I think it proves itself. 7 goals, 1 assist in 9 games. The numbers speak from themselves in that case.
Were you impressed with Christian Pulisic? Because he's kind of had this lull period in the middle part of the season. But, of course, he started again for the first time in the Bundesliga in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. What I like the most about Christian Pulisic, I have to say, is that even during his worst games, he's one of those players that, as a fan, at the ground, you just can't help but keeping an eye on. And that's regardless of how he plays. The performance against Eintracht was okay in his standard. It wasn't great, but he's just one of those players that have to be on the pitch. It gives games added value, especially for spectators at the ground, for fans at the ground. And I've been to Dortmund quite a few times this season. He's one of the players I enjoy the most to watch. His dribbles are incredible, once they work, of course. And all in all, I think he slowly but surely he's been making progress under Peter Stöger, definitely.
Those were two tactical changes that Peter Stöger made to his side that I thought were very interesting, because Mishi Batshuayi, I think, is really important to point out that he's played almost constantly since he moved to Dortmund. And I think both in the Europa League and in the Bundesliga, and I think that can't be forgotten, that when he had that scoring run in February, it kind of went away in March, and it made sense because he had been playing almost every single game. And the fact that Peter Stöger kind of replaced him by putting Marco Reus and André Schürrle in the middle and then starting Christian Pulisic to try to take advantage of that space behind an overeager Timothy Chandler, I thought that was the tactical adjustments that I don't necessarily expect from Peter Stöger. I expect him to have more of a defensive plan and basically to try to launch the ball forward and have their striker try to figure out what to do with the ball next.
Yeah.
But this was something that really impressed me about Peter Stöger. Now, the question that has been floated around is, should he receive a contract extension? Because his contract is only until the end of the season.
Yeah.
Do you think that he is the best option right now for Borussia Dortmund in the coaching position?
I think many Dortmund fans won't agree with my view, but I personally think he is the man for the job. I personally think he's a coach that has been showing progress over years when he was the Cologne coach. I think he has a proven track record of making players better, of knowing how to use youth players, which is very important for many Dortmund fans, for many local fans in Germany in general. I think, all in all, Peter Stöger is the man for Dortmund, especially given his character. And that's very, very important for many, many Dortmund fans. One of the first things I remembered after moving to Germany is I asked one diehard BVB fan, what does she think of Thomas Tuchel, which was a great coach, had all the right results, played the right football. Yet her response was, "We don't like him that much. We miss Klopp." And I asked her, "You're about to get relegated under Klopp at some point." She said, "Yeah, but it's not about the football. It's about the heart. It's about the personality." And I think Peter Stöger is exactly this type of coach. And this is why I think that eventually they will give him a contract extension.
That's interesting to point out, because I think a lot of the arguments that I've had with people about this have said that Peter Stöger doesn't have enough of a coaching. He's not as well-rounded of a coach as someone that maybe could, someone as well-rounded as Thomas Tuchel or as Jurgen Klopp, someone with definitely a definitive style that can basically break ground in football. But that point of his personality, he's Matt Ford has talked about it on this podcast before. He's a very likable character.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he has not lost while at Dortmund is extremely interesting. It definitely goes beyond what tactics he is using. It's going beyond that. And in a world where a lot of outside viewers of football are focused on the tactics of a coach and the style of play of a coach, it kind of can get forgotten that the fact that basically coaches also have to have people skills, and not only people skills with the players, but people skills with his superiors. And Peter Stöger definitely has that, and he had that at Cologne. He had that also, I think, in Austria, which is why he got the Cologne job. And I think that's a very interesting thing that maybe shouldn't be dismissed out of hand if you're having this conversation about Peter Stöger.
Absolutely. And just about that point in regards to tactics, we also have to remember this is not Peter Stöger's team. He didn't make the decision in terms of the players he wants. He didn't shape the team in terms of the squad, in terms of the players he needs in order to play his own brand of football. He has already proven when he was Cologne's coach that once he's been given the time, once he's been given the funds, he can play his own brand of football, and it can also be fun. So I think given all the circumstances here and all the elements that have to be taken into account, I think Peter Stöger is the man for Dortmund also, and that includes next season, absolutely.
All right, so now we're into our Shout from Rosed section. Thank you so much for all of you guys for voting once again. We apologize also for having the poll last week and not actually doing a podcast so we could talk about the Hamburg topic that you guys voted for. But of course, a lot has happened since then. So luckily, that has worked out for the best. So the topic that you guys picked this week was for us to basically predict the squad that Germany's going to use in their game next Friday, not this Friday, but next Friday in Berlin against Spain, and the one against Brazil in Dusseldorf the Tuesday after next. So I think the best way to start with this is to basically decide which players do you think Löw does not have to take in these two friendlies? Because he has four friendlies left to but the next two friendlies are going to be when he has his preliminary squad for the World Cup. So this is the last one before he names his preliminary squad for the World Cup. So who do you think is maybe a shoe-in for the squad that may not be necessary in these two friendlies?
There's quite a few questions in regards to the Germany squad that I can think of. First of all, I can think of a player like Lars Stindl that did really well in the Confed Cup, but isn't necessarily in his best form in his career at the moment at Gladbach.
So do you think he will be in the squad or not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Unfortunately, because it's a player I really appreciate and like.
But won't be in this squad, you're saying?
No, I don't think so.
Are you saying that he will? But would he still be in consideration for the World Cup, you think?
He will be in consideration, but I don't think he'll get to the preliminary squad, given the fact that you got strikers like Folland that are doing very well. You got players like Nils Pedersen that maybe deserves a chance. I think Yogi Löw will pull a trick out of his hat in the when we talk about strikers. The big discussion in Germany in the last couple of months has been whether Löw will take either Sandro Wagner or Mario Gomez. I think there's we're bound for a surprise when it comes to strikers.
Do you think that if that were to be the case, that Mario Gomez would be considered again, do you think that means that he would be in this squad and for the March friendlies? Because it's a very interesting point, because he's been playing much better at Stuttgart now. Mm-hmm. He was kind of left out of the squad at the tail end of qualifying. Mm-hmm. And he might be, that's a good shout. He might be in the squad for these two friendlies, especially since they're against two teams that are really top sides.
Yeah.
And that he's played against before too. So. Oh,
absolutely. Mario Gomez has the experience. He has, and recently also has the ability. Stuttgart has improved greatly under Korkut, and Mario Gomez is playing a big part in that, not necessarily in scoring, but also in assisting, in helping younger players. Erik Tomi is a great example of a young player that improved massively since moving to Stuttgart. And I think Löw will also think about that, because his leading striker, I think everybody knows it's going to be Timo Werner, who's young, who never played in a World Cup. And experience does matter. So I think Gomez is definitely in the discussion. I'm not entirely sure if he'll be included in the actual preliminary squad for the World Cup. I can understand the arguments for both sides. But given Löw's attraction to experience, given Löw's attraction to players he knows already, I think Mario Gomez is in with a shout, definitely.
Okay. So I've been doing a little bit World Cup research. Mm-hmm. And so here's the players that I think that maybe won't be in the squad, just because they're already shoo-ins. And it's basically most of the players that are in basically didn't go to the Confederations Cup. That's Toni Kroos, Mesut Özil, Jerome Boateng, Thomas Müller, Mats Hummels, Joshua Kimmich, and even Leon Goretzka. But I think Leon Goretzka would still be in the squad. But I think Jonas Hector will return. But, I mean, you also look at players like Antonio Rudiger or Emre Can. They might also have already, considering that they played at the Confederations Cup, they also might have basically a lead on other people. Mm-hmm. Any of those names, do you think that they won't be included in the squad because they are already one of the top players that are definitely going?
Well, Löw has the habit of doing that, so I think it's definitely a probability. I think that Löw will experiment, especially in the friendly in Berlin. We will see names that we maybe didn't expect to see. I do expect some of the top names to be there, because I think the spine of the squad, the spine of Löw's formation, I think Löw would like to have them around, would like to give the feeling of how he wants to play, and therefore he needs those players. But yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see, first of all, what sort of squad Löw will take. And second of all, in terms of formation, what sort of tactical ideas Löw will bring. Because he previously said that friendlies for him are the perfect experiment sheet for new tactical ideas, new concepts that he maybe learned elsewhere. And I would be very interested to see how that plays out.
All right, so you've already named Mario Gomez as someone that would be included back into the squad, yeah. You think, in these March friendlies. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody else that you think that maybe didn't go to the Confederations Cup or didn't play at the Euros or maybe hasn't even received his first Germany cap yet and that will be included in the squad?
That's a very good question. I already mentioned Pedersen, Freiburg striker. He's doing magnificently.
A lot of people are advocating for him to go.
Absolutely.
That's definitely true.
He's having a great season so far. He's a smart striker. He's a striker that plays with his head also.
Played at the Olympics as well.
Absolutely, and did very well. That's one name I have to mention. I also think we have to discuss players that have been injured and weren't included in the squad for previous friendlies. I'm talking Jonas Hector, I'm talking Marco Reus. Those are players that will add a lot to the side, and I think I'm going into your next topic.
Those are two. Marco Reus, I think, is also one that will be very interesting to see, because he's obviously missed the past two major tournaments. He was at the 2012 Euros, I believe. He missed the last two major tournaments because of injury.
Yeah.
And he has said before that he doesn't necessarily need to play at a World Cup for him to feel like he's had a successful career. Yeah. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that that would preclude him from being ecstatic for being in the World Cup squad or wanting to go to a World Cup when he has the opportunity. But that's a very, very interesting case, Marco Reus. But I think you're definitely right that he'll be included in this squad. One name that James Thorogood, who does the talking, who used to do the Talking to Football podcast, still does for the from the fantasy angle. He brought up an interesting name, and he brought up Lukas Klostermann.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was very interesting, because like Niels Pedersen, he went to the Olympics, and he did not go to the U21 Euros last year because he was injured. But now he could be basically the second best right back in Germany, arguably. I mean, you have, that's not necessarily a big statement to make, because Germany itself has played Emre Can and Sebastian Rudi in that role. But he's someone that has played on both flanks as well. I think if he gets a call into the March friendlies, he's definitely a name that you'd have to look out for to at least make the preliminary roster for the World Cup, maybe not the final roster. And so, you mentioned tactics before. Do you think that there are things that Liv will tactically try in these two friendlies?
That's an interesting question.
Because that obviously has to do with this the squad too.
So, yeah.
You know, how many center backs they take, how many midfielders they take.
Absolutely. I think for the most part, in terms of Liv's attacking play, I think we know more or less what to expect. I think given the players Liv has to his disposal, I think we generally know what to expect. We know it's going to be based on Timo Werner's speed. It's going to be based on players like Mesut Ozil's smartness. Those are things we know. In the defensive area, that's going to be interesting to see if Löw's going to go along with that trend of having three defenders, for an instance. How is he going to play with Jonas Hector, that just came back from injury and is doing very well despite Cologne's situation? If he's going to play in midfield, as left back, as so many possibilities with Jonas Hector specifically. And that's just one example. So I will definitely be interested to see what's going to happen in terms of Germany's defense. And you mentioned Emre Can also in defensive midfield. That's also an area that I'm going to be looking out to see what Löw has, what ideas he has on that coming up to those friendlies.
He's definitely keen on Emre Can. That's why I think it'll be very interesting to watch how many midfielders he will play with in these friendlies. Because outside of Marco Reus and Leroy Sané, I think, is also a player that even though he's been in World Cup qualifying squads before, I think he will definitely be in these March friendlies. Those are their only two wingers, and you have to think they also have Julian Brandt, and Julian Brandt has played also as a wingback. But I'm curious to see how many players they have in holding midfield, because there's definitely a plethora of options. I think there's a lot of names that he wants to take, and I mean, Julian Weigl is also on that list.
Absolutely.
Sebastian Rudy's on that list. I think that's a definitely good point. But yeah, like you mentioned, the defense. I think if he wants to play with three defenders, it would be very curious to see how many center backs he takes.
Mm-hmm.
Will Jerome Boateng, Niklas Süle, and Mats Hummels all play together in a friendly? Will we see Antonio Rudiger? Will we see Benedikt Höwedes? Even though my assumption would be no, because he's been injured, but we don't know. But I wouldn't want to dismiss attack just yet, because I think there are still things that Mario Gomez has been playing with a striker next to him. Yeah. He told Sportbild recently that him and Daniel Ginchek have played next to each other and it's worked. I would not be surprised if you see in one of the friendlies, if you see Mario Gomez and Sandro Wagner playing on the field at the same time. I wouldn't be surprised if you see if you see Timo Werner and Sandro Wagner playing, basically some combination of two strikers up front. And mm-hmm. you also have to consider the fact that Thomas Müller and Timo Werner have actually not had that much time playing with each other.
Yeah.
So I think that is definitely, and how they play with each other will be also be very interesting to watch, because I think in their last qualifier that I was lucky enough to attend, in their last qualifier against Azerbaijan, Julian, it was traditional wingers that was playing with Timo Werner, mm-hmm. and with Sandro Wagner. But if Thomas Müller is going to be a key part of this squad, where is he going to have to play on the wing? Is he going to have to play in the middle, where he's more suited to playing? So I think those are the things that'll definitely be interesting to watch as well.
Also, you mentioned Thomas Müller and Timo Werner. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how those two will play together, given the fact that both of them like to use spaces, given the fact that both of them have those moments of brilliance in which they finish situations. I think those are one of those combinations that you just say to yourself, either it's going to go super well, we're going to discover a new partner. It's not really a partnership up front, but the idea, a new partnership in attack. Or it's going to go horribly wrong. They're going to play on each other's spaces. That could easily go wrong. But I would really... But now that you mentioned it, I haven't thought of that before, admittedly. But now that you've mentioned it, that's a combination I would like to see in those friendlies. I would like to see Love trying those new things. And Gomez and Wagner together, that's literally stepping on each other's foot. I really can't see it working, but if anyone could make that work, it's Love. So it's definitely going to be an interesting series of friendlies. I definitely agree, from the tactical angle anyways.
Who plays... So to wrap this up, how many games is Marc-Andre ter Stegen going to start? Because he's going to be included in the squad, but do you think that Love is going to basically try to look at the other goalkeepers more, or do you think he's trying to just basically take the goalkeepers for training and have Marc-Andre ter Stegen still be the guy?
Well, given ter Stegen's stature, given the fact that he plays in the highest levels, I think he doesn't really need that introduction, if that makes sense. I do think that Löw will try and involve him more than the other goalkeepers. I think Love is starting to realize that there is this chance that Neuer will not be fit enough, at least for the beginning of the World Cup. And I think Love would do well, and the smart move would be to let Ter Stegen get used to the defenders, get used to the team. And he could do... He's not Neuer, but I don't think he's... less of a choice in that sense. He's a great, great goalkeeper, and that's an example of Germany's amazing squad, if you ask me. Because a keeper like Ter Stegen as a second option, well, ideally as a second option, that just goes to show how deep Germany's squad is. And the short answer to your question is that I think Ter Stegen's going to play. And personally, given how things are progressing with Neuer, I think he's going to start the World Cup as well.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Felix Tomczyk is on Twitter at FTomczyk, and I'm at Davis_Benopter. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. At 22 years and 5 days of age, Timo Werner became the youngest player to make 150 Bundesliga appearances. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.